columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Interesting questions that you propose, Brandon Stokely. Interesting question. Did it have to be this way?
Did it have to end like this?
Talking about Derek Wolfe and his new home. He's going to Baltimore. Explain your question, please.
Well, the Broncos just signed one defensive tackle and let one go. Did they choose Shelby Harris over Derek Wolfe? That's my question. Both of them are making similar amount of money. I know Wolf says up to $6 million, but I think his base salary says $3 million. I don't know what the signing bonus or what's guaranteed. So they're both making around the same, it looks like, on the surface to me. Did the Broncos choose Shelby Harris over Derek Wolf? Did Derek Wolf choose the Ravens over the Broncos? Because the Shelby Harris deal got done first.
Right.
Is that correct?
That's right.
So did the Broncos choose Shelby Harris over Derek Wolf?
Well, I hope not. I'll say that. Let me start there. I do just want to clarify that Derek Wolf's deal is up to $6 million with the Ravens. You mentioned that base salary of three. Shelby's is 2.5 guaranteed, max value up to 3.25. So the most that Shelby Harris can make on his deal is about what Derek Wolf is going to make base salary on his deal with a chance to double it.
His minimum.
His minimum, yeah.
That he's going to make.
Yeah, yeah, because Derek's minimum is three. Shelby's max value, if he hits his incentives, is 3.25. So there is some disparity there. But I'll say this. If Derek Wolfe is healthy and hitting all his incentives, well, then it's worth it for you. You would gladly pay him $6 million. But you're asking me the question. It's the same question I jumped on with Dan Jacobs yesterday morning, the judge.
Oh. And you were on with Dan T.
I was, and he said, who would you rather have, Shelby Harris or Derek Wolfe? And without flinching for a second, I said Derek Wolfe. I mean, Derek Wolfe, I think Derek Wolfe is a overall better football player. I think that he has a better track record of success in this league. And he's really, what is he, a year older? I mean, we have a tendency to, like, view these guys because Wolf
right.
was around for so much longer. That's because Wolf was a second-round pick and was right in the league producing. Shelby Harris was getting cut for four or five teams before he found his legs, his NFL legs here in Denver. But I just think Derek Wolf's a better player. I think he's a better run stopper. I think he gets to the quarterback better. He works better in tandem with Vaughn. So I think Shelby Harris is better at batting down passes, but I think across the board, and a leadership standpoint, let me throw that in there too. Derek Wolfe's a leader on this team. I think across the board, if you let me choose, I would pick Derek, but that's not to say that Shelby Harris isn't a really good football player too, but if you made me choose, I think I'd pick Derek.
Yeah, I would pick Derek Wolfe also. I think when you look at Shelby Harris, I think what we think of, what does he do best? He bats down balls.
Yeah.
Right. That's the first thing that comes to mind with him. I would choose Derek Wolfe also for a lot of the same reasons that you said. And then so it brings us to the question, well, why didn't the Broncos choose him? And like you said, look, we don't have all the details on Wolf's contract. It is a little bit more than Shelby Harris's. But on the surface, their base of their contract is around the same amount. Shelby's going to make probably around $3 million. Wolf looks like it's $3 million plus incentives. And like you said, if he meets those incentives, it's great. You win if you're the Denver Broncos. You'll be more than willing to pay him that extra $2.5-3 million, whatever it may be, if he goes out there and he plays a lot and he's available and he's getting to the quarterback and he's getting sacks. You would love to do that. So in my mind, it's almost like the Broncos, chose Shelby Harris over Derek Wolfe. I don't know if that's the case or not. I don't know if they looked at it and they just didn't want to pay that extra little bit of money with the possibility of paying more money. So I can't look at it any other way. I would have chose differently. I would have chose Derek Wolf, like you said. But to me, I look at it and say, well, that kind of looks like the Broncos had a choice possibly of the two, because right after they signed Shelby Harris, a day later or whatever it was, Derek Wolf signed with the Ravens.
Yep. Yeah, the news from Shelby Harris signing with the Broncos was at almost 9 o'clock on Friday night, and before 3 o'clock on Saturday, Derek Wolf is signing with the Ravens. So I would like to know how that went down. I'm not sure if we'll ever find out, but what the conversations were like behind the scenes. But I'll say this, man. I'll go back to this. I just cannot believe the value that the Broncos got Shelby Harris at. I mean, I can't believe $2.5 million guaranteed. That's the punter's money. And, I mean, really, Shelby Harris is a really good football player for a max value of $3.25 million. That is just a stunning number, and I'm not going to call my shot, but it could work out like this, that at the end of the year, when they do these league-wide, you know, who got the best bang for their buck, Shelby Harris could be at the top of that list. Because you look at Shelby Harris this past year, I mean, six sacks, started all 16 games, 50 tackles. Six quarterback hits, led the league in batted down balls for a defensive lineman for a max value of 3.25.
It looks like his base salary is, you know, $3 million. 3.095 is going to be his base salary, is what I'm looking at. I'm sorry. This is not updated here. This is not updated. This was 2019. So
okay.
I'm wrong on this one.
Yeah, no worries. I'm taking it from Nikki's tweet when she broke the news.
So you said up to 3.
Yep. It got his contract 1 year, guaranteed $2.5 million. And has a max value of 3.25.
Gotcha. It'd be interesting to see if that's incentivized or if that's, you know, what the structure of Shelby Harris's contract looks like. You know, what does his base salary look like for the year? I know 2.5 is guaranteed, but is his base salary 3.2 or is his base salary 2.5 and then he has $700,000 of incentives? You follow me there?
Yep, I do. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so that's going to be what's interesting to look at, because that's a big difference. That's a big difference, because if his base salary is 3.25, guess what? I don't care if 2.5 is guaranteed. He's going to make all of that.
Sure.
He's going to make it all, right? So you look at it, and you know, it's not much different than Derek Wolf's base salary for the year, which looks like it's going to be around $3 million.
Sure. It's a great question that you brought up. And by the way, let me just say this. We're going to be joined by Shelby Harris at 2 o'clock today. So less than we're going to be joined by Shelby. So really looking forward to that conversation. If you have a question for Shelby, why don't you shoot it to either the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. If you want more assurances that it gets through to me, hit me up on Twitter. I am at Byesline, BYESLINE, and you can follow Stoke at BStokely14 if you want to bounce some questions off Shelby.
Yeah, that's going to be good. It's going to be interesting to see the thought process from him, what happened, what didn't happen, what he thought would happen, and I'm sure he's happy to be back here. Yeah, you know, it's a place where that he knows he excelled in Vic's defense, and he had a great year. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing played out, and a guy that we thought was going to be gone ends up returning and providing you know, a nice presence there right in the middle.
Yep. Really good stuff. I think that this is potentially a grand slam deal. And by the way, good on the Broncos. Good on the Broncos. You look at how many deals were drawn up here in the last handful of weeks. All fiscally responsible. Like you, A.J. Boye, you'll be able to move on if you need to. Jarrell Casey, you'll be able to move on if you need to. Shelby Harris, we were talking about, hey, should the Broncos have come to him during the season and did a bigger deal, right? You remember those conversations just a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
You got him for $3.25 million. I mean, from a financial standpoint, man, I got to applaud what John Elway's done here.
Yeah, no, they've done a nice job. When you look at some of these contracts, obviously I think the biggest one that they doled out was Glasgow.
Yes.
But other than that, you're able to bob and weave and get out of these things really quickly if a Jarrell Casey is showing that, you know what, his better days are behind him and he's not earning that 10, 11, 12 million bucks on his contract, or same thing for A.J. Boye, is not earning that $13 million salary for 2021. You're able to just move on and kind of wash your hands, no dead cap hit, and just kind of walk away from those contracts. So that gives you a lot of flexibility moving forward in future years to not be saddled with these huge contracts that are just killing your cap and just limit what you can do in the offseason. Now, obviously, you hope that, best case scenario is you hope you're paying these guys in 2021. You know, that's what you want. You want to be paying these guys a lot of money. It's a lot on the cap when you're paying a guy $13, $11, $12 million a year, a couple of those guys. So obviously you would prefer to pay them, but if their performance doesn't meet their salary, then you're able just to wash your hands and move on, and you didn't give up a lot for these guys. When you look at the draft picks that they gave up, they didn't give up a lot. So it's good moves by John Elway and Matt Russell and company of how they've navigated free agency. I've liked the trades. I've liked some of the free agent pickups, and they haven't put themselves in tough spots moving forward if these guys don't play at a high level.
Well said. How about this, Stoke? You and I have we've piggybacked as a show, but you say a lot, no excuses, no explanations. Is this the ultimate no excuses and no explanations draft for the Broncos? A prominent name out there says so. I'll tell you who said what next.
The Boss. Love the Boss.
Yes,
Bruce.
Oh, so good. So good. Puts on one of the best live shows ever. Could you imagine him pumping this one out like Madison Square Garden?
Man. Tell you what. Tough to beat that.
Tampa Bay's own Bruce Springsteen.
There you go, baby. I thought he was from Louisiana.
You know, you have a saying that we have adopted here on the show. It goes something like, no excuses, no explanations. And you took that from Tony Dungy, am I right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that phrase popped up this weekend and it caught your eye. And it was John Lynch. And he was being asked about the challenges that this COVID-19, the restriction that it has put on everyone. All right, forget the sporting world. It's put restriction on everyone. You and I aren't sitting in the same room right now because of it. But as it pertains to the draft and the lack of capability that is typically at their fingertips is not there this year. And John Lynch, general manager of the San Francisco 49ers, former Bronco, you know him, he said, quote, "This draft is absolutely huge for us. So there's no excuses. There's no explanations. We got to get our work done, albeit from home. We've been killing the Zoom meetings." I should have bought some stock in Zoom, end quote. Why did that stick out to you, Stoke?
Well, I love the approach. You know, it doesn't matter what situation you're in right now. Everybody's in the same situation if you're NFL front office and you're going through this draft process, and it's a lot different than what it normally is, and you can't, you know, bring all these prospects in. You got to think outside the box. You still got to get your work done. You still got to pick the right guys. That's just part of it. It doesn't matter the situation. And, you know, as football players, if you played in any kind of athletics, it doesn't matter throughout your, you know, life, you face some different circumstances, some different adversities, and the teams or the organizations that are able to overcome them and just not worry about them, whether it be a wet field, a snowing, bad weather, bad turf, whatever it may be, bad rims, it doesn't matter. The teams and the organizations that are able to overcome those circumstances are the ones that thrive. And the organizations that will look to make this an excuse and say, well, we couldn't do this and we had trouble doing that, well, those are the ones that are going to do a bad job. And so it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. Either you get it done or you don't get it done. Either you win the game or you lose the game. Either you pick the right players or you don't pick the right players. Everybody's playing on the same field.
Right.
It's everybody's there. And so I love that approach from John. Look, there's no excuses here. There's no explanations. We got to get the job done. And it's important for them. He said how important this draft is. It's important for a lot of teams. And certainly it's very important for the Denver Broncos. And you heard the report come out just real quick about some of the general managers that kind of heeing and hawing about it a little bit and didn't, you know, wanted the draft pushed back. You know what? It is what it is. It doesn't do any good about complaining or crying about your circumstances and your situation, because everybody has the same playing field. Everybody's playing under the same rules. And so either you get the job done or you don't. I don't want to hear about how tough it is.
Yep. No, you're absolutely right. It's everyone's playing by the same set of rules here. They're brand new rules, but they're the same set of rules regardless. And I heard from Lee Steinberg, and we know Lee Steinberg, of course, a longtime agent. He was Paxton Lynch agent, right? He said, he said, quote, and this is just an opposing viewpoint I want to bring up here. He said, quote, when I first started in the industry in 1975 with Steve Bartowski, there were no pro days. There was no team meetings. There was no combine. If you look at statistics from players then to those selected in 2005, the players in 1975 were more successful and productive. Teams obviously believe that the more information they have, the better. But at some point, it's enough. I believe they have enough information to make educated and prudent choices. End quote. And I absolutely love that. When I read that, I thought to what you sent us to this weekend to me and Steven. I'm like, look, we have enough here. We have enough. I know that you're not going to be able to bring in official visits and really be able to sit down. Well, find your answers a different way. And you have the tape. Most importantly, King of the Hill, you have the tape, the game tape. And sometimes I think the further we get removed from the games and the more we dwell into the numbers and fractions of an inch, whether it be the height or hand size or vertical, three cone, whatever, the more we add into the pot of ingredients. But the main ingredient is the game tape, and the Broncos have that.
Yes, and they can watch it. You got iPads, you got computers, all that stuff's working, so you can dial up the tape and watch that at any time, at any moment. So it's not like you're sitting at home without access. You know, in today's world that we live in, access is everywhere. You have it all over the place. So you pick up a phone, you pick up a computer, you pick up an iPad, and everything that you want is right there for a player, but certainly for an organization. If you're trying to scout these guys and trying to get more looks at these guys, and ultimately, like you said, Zach, that's what it comes down to. What do you do on the football field?
Right.
All that other stuff can kind of cloud judgment sometimes, and maybe second guess what you viewed on the film. Just go back to the film. Go back to the basics. And sometimes that's the best thing to do, is just forget all that other stuff. Sometimes it becomes just too much. It's like when coaches have 2-3 weeks to game plan. They just come up with too much, and they start second guessing themselves, and they start putting too much in. And sometimes it's better just to have a limited amount of time. You know, those quick turnaround games, those Thursday games. The reason why I liked them so much was because these coaches couldn't overthink things. It's just like, here it is. This is what we're doing. This is what we're going with. You couldn't have this huge exotic game plan, all these new and different things. You went out there and you just try to out execute the other team. And that's the same approach that you got to take for the draft. Is, you know what, not having all these interviews and all these different things to look at and these pro days and to second guess or doubt yourself, just watch the film. Watch what these guys do on the football field, because that's what you're going to want them to do for you. You're going to want them to perform on the football field for you. They're not going to be on a track. They're going to be on a football field. And how do they look on the football field? You got the tape right there. So you have enough at your disposal. And I also think that when you look at the players and
what they're not able to do right now, these young players, and also when we'll see what the offseason looks like, but obviously there's going to be some kind of adjustment to the offseason program when it comes to the workouts and the mini camps and stuff. I mean, that's going to happen. I know it hasn't come out yet, but that's going to happen at some point. So you look at that, and I think that, you know, will we see more injuries or will we see less injuries? Because of the adjusted off-season program, I think for the younger players, it's going to be harder to get up to speed. But it might help them stay healthy. It might help some of the older players stay healthy. Or will it hurt them because they're not doing that off-season training that they're used to doing? So that's going to be an interesting thing to follow. But I think for organizations and for front offices, you know, John Lynch said it best, man. No excuses, no explanations. It doesn't matter your circumstances. And I love that approach. That's the best approach you can have. And when you're a leader, that's the message you want to send to everybody else.
Yeah.
And I know as a player, when my coaches would speak like that, it would just take it out of your mind. Oh, it doesn't matter if it's cold. Doesn't matter if it's raining. Look, you dropped the ball. I don't want to hear it. It doesn't matter. You either caught it or you didn't catch it. You either ran a good route or you didn't. You either won or you lost. It doesn't matter the circumstances. It doesn't, because the other team's going through the same stuff.
Yeah, really well said. Really well said. And like you said, we're all shooting at the same basket. So figure it out. Go figure it out. Just like, you know, the challenges that we have right here, we're figuring it out. So you just got to get through it. And speaking of like the off-season workouts that you just mentioned, how about, I don't know if you saw this on Twitter, Devontae Bosby, the Broncos' own, was working out side by side with top prospect out of Clemson, Isaiah Simmons.
That's pretty interesting. I saw him doing some drills, some DB drills and some DB work together, which was really cool.
You know what?
He looked good. He looked healthy for me. You know, you look at Isaiah Simmons, and it's like, okay, you know, that guy's going to be a top 10 pick, probably maybe a top 5 pick. We'll see how it goes. And he's a special football player. But then just watching Bosby move around, you know, he had the neck issue, right, last year.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts that he wasn't going to re-sign with the Broncos, that they weren't entertaining that. But they did. They brought him back. And so the neck must have checked out. Because he was playing good football for
him. He was. He really was.
I'm excited about him. He looks good out there working out, too, by the way.
I got to be honest. If you didn't know who was who, would you be able to? And it was such a limited sample, so I got that. But if you didn't know, like, who you were looking at, would you be able to instantly tell who was Isaiah Simmons and who was Devontae Bosby?
No.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either. And I think that's a testament to him getting back. Bosby was one of like four guys last year that were like out of nowhere and somehow were contributing. Like Mike Purcell, A.J. Johnson, Devontae Bosby, Devontae Harris were like, wait, who are these guys again? And then there they were. And maybe have a real future with the Denver Broncos. Okay. I have an interesting question. We were just talking about this quote from Lee Steinberg and how the lack of capability and the discovery process leading up to the draft is not going to be at the fingertips of these NFL organizations. I have a very interesting question that I think needs to be asked about one particular player as it relates to the Denver Broncos at 15. You're going to want to stick around for this. I promise. It's next. Rocking out with you on a Monday, however you are listening, wherever you are listening, we appreciate you rocking with us right here on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, and Stokely and Zach, to get specific with it. Our streaming numbers are through the roof, which is so encouraging because it's letting us know that even though your day-to-day life has been disrupted, your listenership to this show has not. And for that, boy, Stoke, I don't know if we can thank him enough.
No, certainly appreciate people listening during these times. Everybody's schedule's all off, and hopefully we can help just take your mind off of everything else that's going on and put a smile on your face, maybe a laugh or two. We can all laugh at Zach. I know that's, you know, that's pretty easy, so you know, that's probably a big reason why, Zach.
Speak for yourself, Stoke. I am looking at a picture of you right now.
Yeah?
From your Raging Cajun days.
Uh-huh.
This had been some sort of film op or photo op. You are on the field. You are playing some sort of football chess game. And you have your uniform on, you're padded up as well.
Uh-huh.
But the frosty tips up top.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I didn't realize during your college years you went M&M on them. I don't know
what picture you're talking about. Certainly there's pictures out there, but some have probably been doctored or you know, what do they call that nowadays when you
mess Photoshop.
You Photoshop it up and stuff. So, you know, I don't know what's out there, what's not out there.
I don't know how it was found, but Dan Jacobs found it over the weekend.
He must have Photoshopped it.
And I'm telling
Dan Jacobs is like Bearcat Gym. I mean, it must not have anything better to do.
Goodness gracious. This picture is hilarious.
I thought he was a judge. I mean, does he do anything?
Oh, he was judging all right, looking at that picture. Well, and the gavel was coming down. Saying, what the heck were you thinking? You're getting life.
I don't think that's an accurate picture, and I don't ever remember taking that picture. Somebody probably photoshopped it up or something. That's all I can say about that.
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you this. You weren't the only one. I had some frosty tips in middle school. So, all right. I have a question for you. We were just having this conversation about how this offseason is different. And this quote from Lee Steinberg stuck out to me in relation to what you sent me and Steven, where John Lynch, general manager of San Francisco, says, this draft's absolutely huge for us, so there's no excuses, there's no explanations. We got to get our work done, even if it's from home. We're just going to figure it out. And Lee Steinberg said, when I first started in the longtime agent, of course, he said, quote, when I first started in this industry in 1975 with Steve Bartkowski, there were no pro days, there was no team meetings, there was no combine. If you look at the stats from players then to those selected in, say, 2005, the players in 1975 were more successful and productive. Teams obviously believe that the more information they have, the better, but at some point, it's enough. And I believe they have enough information to make educated and prudent choices, end quote. And here's the question that I have as it relates to that. My response was that we get so far away from the game film, and the closer we get to the draft, we value fractions of an inch in the vertical. We value fractions of seconds in 40 times, and we fractions of inches in hand size and height. Remember Baker Mayfield? Is he 6 foot? Is he not? Or Kyler Murray as well? Oh, he doesn't want to get measured at the combine. He'll measure at the pro day. I'm like, wait, what do you mean? If you're tall, you're the same height. You're the same height. It doesn't matter. You know, it's just that time of year. But I'm winding up to this question: if the NFL combine never happened, would Henry Ruggs be being mocked to 15 to the Denver Broncos?
Yes. Yes.
You think so?
Yes. You see the speed on tape. That's why. And certainly, you know, he runs the 4.2, whatever it was. But he didn't have to run that. You could put on the tape and say, oh, we need speed. We need a wide receiver. Well, we're going to put him with the Denver Broncos. You see what I'm saying there? Because, man, you put his tape on and you can see that guy can flat out fly. So I don't think that you look at just what he did at the combine and say, oh, okay, well, we're going to ignore the film here. He's really fast at the combine, but he's not that fast on the football field. No, he's fast on the football field, and he just showed it and verified it at the combine.
Okay, I disagree with you. I think that he'd be a first-round selection. I don't know if he'd be the second wide receiver off the board. Maybe the first, and boy, I was listening to Mike Evans this morning go through Henry Ruggs' game log against SEC opponents. It's something that we should take serious note of, and I'll tell you why next. So we were just talking about Henry Ruggs. And by the way, we're going to be joined by Shelby Harris at 2 o'clock, who just re-signed with the Denver Broncos on Friday night. And boy, the best kind of deal that you can get as a franchise from a team perspective, Shelby Harris on a one-year contract for $3.25 million, just $2.5 million guaranteed. We're going to talk to Shelby here in about 14 minutes or so. But I asked you the question. I said, hey, if the NFL Combine did not happen, would Henry Ruggs still be mocked at 15th overall? Just the second wide receiver selected. Typically, Jerry Jeudy is going first, but who knows? With that speed, he may go.
It could be the third. It could be the third. It could be the third. You know, because you got the Jets, you got Oakland in front of us, and so it could be Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, and the Broncos get the third guy, and it could be Henry Ruggs.
He could also be the first.
He could be the first. Yes,
I know it's unlikely, but gosh,
but he could. I've seen him go top 10.
You know what? It's not that crazy.
When you run four twos, I mean, anything is possible.
Right.
Like, you know, where somebody might just, the Raiders might look at him and say, we got to get that guy, and they might move in, you know, to the top 10 and try to scoop him up.
Yeah, no, very, it just takes one. I mean, Cleveland Farrell, people were like, who?
And, yes,
you know,
right.
The guy went like fourth overall or wherever it was. I'm listening to the morning show, and I'll give Mike Evans credit here because he's the one who really brought it to my attention. But I had to take a step back when he started going through Henry Ruggs' game log. Listen to this.
Hey, one last thing about Henry Ruggs, okay? One thing that we've had complaints over the years with the Broncos is that they've placed too much emphasis on the potential of what a guy could do rather than what he actually did in college, mm-hmm. right? Here's what Ruggs did last year in SEC games, okay? SEC games. Not the cream puffs early on in the season. SEC games.
Right.
These were his catches and yards. 1 for 11, 1 for 33, 4 for 72, 4 for 47, 3 for 68, 3 for 39, 6 for 99, and then a bowl game against Michigan, 2 for 27. Okay, he runs fast, but if you're somebody who believes that in order for the Broncos to draft him, there needs to be a little bit more there on their college tape, their college production, that's what he did in conference. Whole bunch of one catch and three catch games.
And I had to go look at it for myself. And it is pretty alarming. Now, I will say this. Mike did. I don't know if he purposely did it or not.
Right,
but he did leave out a game against South Carolina. Where he went, the biggest game. Well, he went six catches for 122 yards.
Yeah.
Now, granted, that was the third game of the season. After that, he had one more big game, and that was against, you know, Southern Mississippi in a 49-7 blowout where he had four receptions for 148 yards and two touchdowns for his biggest game of the year. But I got to tell you, the last, call it, nine games of his season are not impressive at all.
No, you look at his stats. I mean, he had, what, 40 catches for the year?
Yeah, 40 catches,
total,
7 touchdowns.
Total.
Yep. He's a third leading receiver at Alabama.
And his two biggest games of the year, besides the Southern Miss game, which was his biggest, the two behind that were SEC schools, and both of them were six catch games, one of them for 122 yards, one for 99. But whenever you have 40 catches for the year, you're not going to go in these and have 8-10 catches a game. You're just not. The facts are the facts. I mean, he can move. Obviously, you want to, when you see something like this, you got to do your homework, and you got to see, is it because they have Jerry Jeudy, and is it because they have such a good running game? Is it, you know, is he just one of those guys that was not the main target? You can't always just look at the college stats and project it to the NFL.
Sure,
it doesn't work that way.
Sure, I know.
So you got to do some projections here, and you got to do some guessing and some speculating on how they're going to transition to the NFL. How's their game going to transition? And there's always outliers. There's always different circumstances that prove things wrong. Certainly, I don't advocate for speed wide receivers early in the draft. You've known that. I've said this thing for years.
Yep.
I don't like it. I think Henry Ruggs can be successful at 15. I fell in love with him when I watched his tape, but I'm kind of, you know, for me, there's other receivers that I'd rather take at 15 over Henry Ruggs. It scares me. The stats scare me a little bit, certainly.
So you they know, do scare you to a certain degree.
Absolutely.
It's a non-starter because he didn't, you know, catch eight balls a game. But,
right.
I mean, he never had a game where he caught seven. And he got just two touchdowns in the last six games of the season.
That's right.
That's a little bit alarming.
No, it is. It is. I'm not going to take him off my board because of that. I'm not going to not draft him at 15 because of that. I'm going to do my research. I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to watch all the film and ask myself why.
Why is he only catching three balls against LSU? Why is he only catching three balls against Mississippi State the next week? Why only four against Arkansas? One against Texas A&M? I mean, seriously? One against Ole Miss? Why? Why is that the situation? And I'm going to come up with my answer, and I'm going to figure that out, and I'm going to see if he projects to be a good wide receiver in the NFL or not. But certainly, you see, we've seen a lot of guys with great stats
in
college.
Sure.
Huge stats in college. They come to the NFL, they stink. So I think this thing works both ways now. You know, Mike can say it, you know, this way, but all of a sudden you're going to go get a player that has, you know, the most catches ever in college and say he's a first-round pick because he was productive in college? No.
I'll give you
We're
one.
Not going to do that.
I'll give you one. And I don't have his stats right in front of me, but Carlos Henderson from Louisiana Tech. That guy was absolutely going nuts from a statistical standpoint. That guy was going crazy in college.
Yeah.
You're talking about over 1,500 yards receiving. That's twice as many as Henry Ruggs. The kid had 19 touchdowns in one season before jumping to the NFL.
Right. How did that work out?
It didn't.
It never did.
He couldn't string together sentences and ended up eating an ounce on the side of the road and couldn't feel his legs 15 minutes later. But it just...
Wow, that's a scouting report right there. Holy cow. I was just talking about on the football field. I wasn't talking about off the football field. But it didn't work out on the football field. I can tell you that. I don't know about all that other stuff you're talking about.
I mean, the guy was a third-round draft pick 2 years later. He's not in the league.
So, that's the tricky part here. You can't pull a Mike Evans and just say, look at the stats. The stats don't back up the, you know, where he's drafted. You can't do that. It goes beyond that because there's numerous guys that you can look at and you can say, well, look how many yards that guy threw for in college. Well, that doesn't mean he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. I mean, Case Keenum threw for tons of yards.
Right.
How's his career been?
Right.
He's just been a journeyman backup pretty much. Andre Ware, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury, all these guys that threw for all these yards. You can look at receivers that had all these yards and catches in college, and it's more than stats, okay? So that's what I would say about the Henry Ruggs situation. I'd be very careful about drafting speed wide receivers. I'd be very careful about drafting guys with 40 catches in a season at number 15. So, yes, I'm with him on that, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to touch the guy or I'm not going to say, no way, I'm not going to take this guy because he only had 40 catches.
It's
a piece of the puzzle. And ultimately, I'm going to find out why. I'm going to ask the question, why is this the case here? Why does he only have 40 catches? What's going on here? Because you look at him, you look at his talent, you look at, you know, being 6'1", 190 and running a 4.240, and you got weapons all around you. You're probably singled up a lot. You have a really good quarterback for most of your college career. Now, obviously, Tua got hurt, but still, why aren't you a 70-catch guy a season? What is wrong here? That's what I'm going to have to get answered before I draft him at 15.
And here's another piece of context, Stoke, and then you're not going to find this if you just type into Google, you know, Henry Ruggs highlights. But when you start watching the tape a little bit with Henry Ruggs, it is obvious at certain points in the game how much attention the defense is paying attention to Henry Ruggs. I saw a clip where he's lined up on the right side of the field, and this man has three different DBs looking at him and has them all shifting to his side of the field. He didn't get the ball thrown to him. The ball ended up getting thrown to Jerry Jeudy, who's wide open on the left side of the field. So obviously I'm not breaking any information to you. You played that position for a decade and a half in the league, but it's about the credible threat that he brings to the table and opens it up for maybe Courtland Sutton, maybe Noah Fant.
Well, sure, and I'd have to go back and watch, you know, whole game tapes on Henry Ruggs and watch a game versus Ole Miss. Why only one catch? You can't tell me they're doubling Henry Ruggs every stinking play, and they're not paying any attention to Jeudy. They're not paying any attention to the running game.
No, of course.
Right. So, that's my question here is why? Why only one catch here? And in college, man, with that type of speed, I don't care what they're doing. We see it in the NFL with Tyreek Hill and his speed. It doesn't matter what they try to do against him. They can't stop him. So certainly the question is just why? You know, with your talent, your size, you're not a 5'4" guy. You're 6'1", 190. You're a good size wide receiver, and you're a blazer, and you got weapons all around you, and one of the best offensive line in college football. Why such lack of production in a lot of these football games? And that's kind of where I would go to and try to figure that out before I would draft him at 15. But for me, there's other receivers I would prefer at 15 over Ruggs. Even guys that they have behind him, I like Jefferson. I like Mims. And those are two guys.
There's a lot to like about those guys. And they're both rising, by the way. And we're going to talk a little bit about that more tomorrow. But, boy, those guys are rising.
Yeah. You know, when Cecil said that Jefferson might not be a first-round pick, I think it was a week ago or a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I was shocked.
He's in. Dude, he's in. He's in. He's going to the first round.
Yeah. And now Mims. And I was asking that question because Cecil asked me to watch tape on Mims. I watched him. I said, I love this guy. If he runs 4.3s at the combine or whatever it's going to be, I don't understand how he's not going to be a first-round pick. That was my question. How is this guy not a first-round pick? His size, his production, his speed, and at that time, to Cecil's credit, at that time, people were projecting him to be an early second-round pick. But now you look, where is he at? A lot of people have him in the first round.
Yep, that's what I'm seeing. That is what I'm seeing. So it's not a...
Give me your thoughts on Ruggs real quick. I mean, look, with all the stuff that's come in, you've watched him. I've seen him. 40 catches, 746 yards last year, 7 touchdowns. What would you do if you're sitting there at 15 and all of a sudden Judy's gone, Lamb's gone? Do you take him?
Boy, if Lamb is gone as well, I'm probably taking Henry Ruggs. Yeah, but he's not in my top two. I love Lamb and Judy before I get to Ruggs. And I'm fluid here still because a guy like Justin Jefferson, the more that I'm digging into him, and boy, by the way, you want to talk about someone who performed against the very best competition? Go pull up Justin Jefferson's game log. Stoke, this dude rose to the occasion nearly every single stinking time. And as the emphasis got greater, his impact got greater. So right now, I'm saying Ruggs, but man, I feel like that next group of guys, I'd probably still take Ruggs. I'd probably right now. You're asking me on March 30th. I'd probably still take Ruggs if Lamb and Judy were off the board. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Lamb or Judy's going to be there, and if they're not, that means you're going to be able to draft one of those top 4 or 5 offensive tackles that in Mel Kiper's scenario were gone at 15. You can't have them all. You can't jam 16 picks in the first 14.
You can't do that?
No, you can't do
it. It's just not possible, right?
You can't squeeze them all in there.
I got my top 5 wide receivers. I'll give them to you here.
Really?
Yeah, I got my top 5. I did a show on I forgot what it was on, but we were breaking down some of these wide receivers, and I kind of broke down my 5. This was a couple weeks ago, so I have my 5 that my top 5 board receivers.
Are you comfortable with doing that segment tomorrow?
Yeah, I think so. Tomorrow we do that 24-hour tease. What time would you like? I mean, you want to open the show guns blazing, or we just let the show just come naturally, and then once we settle down a little bit, I pick it back up and provide a spark.
How about you
name it?
How about
you control this thing?
How about like Lil Wayne said, let the beat build. Let's throw it at 2:30.
Okay. Just don't forget.
All right,
Lil Wayne.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.